Okay, we have 31 board members present. That is a quorum. Let's please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, let me start with communications and announcements. We have the Chair's Report. I have a few things to talk about there. The first one, meeting attendance, and I hate to have to harp on people about this. However, in the last 3 or 4 months, we have had 2 committee meetings that did not take place at the last second because there was not a quorum. 2 meetings that almost didn't take place, but we rounded up folks and pressed them into service to make quorum. So that means 4 times in the last probably 3 months that we have had a situation where we did not know until the time the meeting was going to start that there would not be a quorum. First of all, if you are not going to be at a meeting and you know it in advance, please contact the chair's office. If you don't call the chair's office or the clerk's office or the department head's office, if it's one of those, if it's a committee that has a department head that kind of runs things, you don't notify any of them, you're going to be marked as absent. That's the least of the problems. The bigger problem is we may not get quorums, and so don't just assume that people know that you're not going to be there. If at the last minute you don't know, still, you know, let's say that you get sick that day or you are in a car accident on the way over, whatever the case may be, if you have any ability to contact somebody, and in particular, the main contact person for that type of thing would be the chair's office. Write down Margaret's phone number and call her anytime that you're not going to be there. We really need to be sure that we're going to have quorums. I have the authority to appoint replacement temporary committee members, but I need to know. I mean, if I have the ability to do it, but if there's nobody there that I can appoint, there's not going to be a quorum. So, you know, please be real considerate in that regard. The second thing along the same lines is that at our last policy planning meeting, there were 11 people absent. Now, some had very valid reasons for not being here, but I have noticed a bit of a pattern that our attendance at policy planning meetings is not the same as it is at these meetings. It usually drops off by several. When we did committee changes a number of years ago, we went from you having a number of, all of us having a number of committees that we had to go to each month to really now, for most people, having one. But in return for that, we also have the policy planning meeting instead. So that is not something that you should think about attending. That is something that you really need to be at. We look at that as a very important part of the process. So please try to make every effort to make that meeting also. So I'm done harping for the night. Apologize for that. But I needed to get that out of the way because we've had a problem. On a more positive note, those of you who have checked your email today probably noticed that you got a thing called La Crosse County e-update. That is a new innovation that Mr. O'Malley and I have started that is a way to get the word out to the public about things that we're doing. The best part of it is that it costs us nothing because it's email. What we are doing is Mr. O'Malley and I are taking turns writing up the script for it, and we already have a list in the computer. We put all the local officials and also county board members and department heads in there. People can also sign up through the county website if they're interested in getting that. For at least the first few months, we hope to do that weekly because we have a whole list of things that we've already got pretty much lined up to send out. One of the things will be the department head reports that you get every month. If people are interested in getting into the inner workings of the county, they can go that far into it. If people are only interested in some basic stuff, if you looked at it today, you'll notice one of the things that was listed was the upcoming flu shot clinic. So we wanted this as a service to people to understand what their tax dollars are going for throughout the county. And anybody who's interested, all they have to do is to go to the county website, click on the button, put in their email address, and they will automatically get it. If anybody gets it and doesn't want to get it, all they have to do is hit the button for unsubscribe, and that takes care of it. So if you have a chance to look at that, be interested in any feedback that people have to make it better or however we could change it. Mr. Ebert.
Yes, I guess I'm a little surprised at something that doesn't come to the board before you institute something like that. And I'd also like to know the criteria, if there's, you know, are other board members allowed to write something? I just think that that's something that you guys have gone out, not found out if the board liked it or thought it was a good idea. And I think that that's a little presumptuous on you and the administrator.
Well, it's a report from Mr. O'Malley and myself, and it doesn't involve any money, so we had worked this up and wanted to do this as essentially a pilot to make sure that it was going to work and that the board was comfortable with it. To answer your question, thank you for reminding me, because I did want to mention anybody who has anything that you want to submit to go into that, we would love that. If you want to write up an editorial, a story, some statistics, whatever whatever you may be interested in, we want that kind of stuff.
Yeah, because my concern, it can be used in as agenda pusher. And that's why I'm wondering if there's some rules or something to limit that will be written and everyone understands the rules of the game.
I guess that's why I'm looking for feedback from people. Mr. Menninger.
Yeah, there's about 10 of us that don't get this county email address because it's a hassle and open records, and it's just and so we get it in the mail instead. Sometimes we miss things. Now, this thing is available to the public, so then can we then get on that email list?
Yes.
And not be on the other one? Do we get it at our home email? I'm just...
Terry put in the email addresses, and people who don't have a county email address may have automatically got it at the one that we have. If you did not get it today...
When did it come out? Today?
Today, this afternoon, or this morning. If you did not get it, then go to the county website and just subscribe. Or else call Terry and give her your email address, but Terry. It might just be easier to go to the county website and subscribe.
Oh, Terry, your secretary?
My assistant, Terry.
Okay. Yeah. But, yeah, it is not something just for board members, so you can use whatever email address that you want.
So. Okay.
And I do want to address Mr. Ebert's concern about pushing some agenda. It is not at all going to be that, and I want to be very careful that we don't go down that path. It is going to be things like the monthly reports you get from department heads, facts and figures, reminding people that the election's coming up, reminding people their dog licenses are due. As I said, we have the flu shot clinic listed in there. The first one had my editorial that was in the Tribune a couple weeks ago about how La Crosse County compares statewide with taxes. But if it ever gets to the point where we're saying, people should support this plan versus that plan, that would be inappropriate. That would not be an appropriate use of a public resource, even though it doesn't take tax dollars to send out that email. It would be an inappropriate use of a public resource.
And let me interject as well, just a second. Most of the content, like the editorial that was in this first edition, will be items you've already seen. We don't want to reinvent the wheel each time. We're trying to take all the work that's already been done, like the monthly reports that you're already seeing, and give them to a larger audience. Documents that you've already seen about tax comparisons, legislative positions like on high-speed rail, I mean, items that you're already working on that really just stays in this room. Unless somebody goes to our minutes, they never know all the work that this body and your department heads do on behalf of the community. We're trying to gain a larger access to the community about the good work that the county does, and you shouldn't be reading brand-new things. You ought to be reading items that you've already seen or you know about. Just like the monthly report, you get more information about the entire county, not just the committees that you're on. And we just think there's a larger audience for the work that we do. I don't want to have to be creating a whole lot of new documents, but I'd like to have people see the information that your staff is producing for you, and your taxpayers and citizens actually see a lot of the good work that's happening.
And that would be my point, is the first time we saw this was in your document, as opposed to coming to the board saying we anticipate doing this and getting feedback at that point. And I think you made a mistake, and I hope that in the future, if you do something like that, you'll have the courtesy to come to the board first and get our feelings before you institute something I would call fairly major.
Other discussion? Vicki Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to applaud you on your effort to increase communication, and I do believe that at one of the county board retreats that we had, I don't remember if it was this last time or time before, we talked specifically about public relations and about information to the public and letting them have a better idea of some of the things that occur. I think it's a good idea to do those monthly reports that we have. I think those are very informative, and I do think that we have discussed this as something that we wanted to look for ways to give greater information to the community.
Chair Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just surprised that we're debating this issue. It just seems to me the only person in this room that would be, that I would have expected might have any concern about this would be Dick Mile, because it might cut into the number of newspapers that get sold. I can't imagine communicating more often, more information, being a bad thing. And I want to echo what Supervisor Burke said, which is I think it's a great idea, and I think especially for town officials, for village officials, for municipal officials, for, you know, other electeds to see this information is a terrific thing, and I hope you keep it up.
Thank you. Mr. Schrader.
Now, I didn't quite, just so I'm sure on this, Mr. Menninger was questioning whether we can get this email through other than the county's website. Does that open up our home sites to?
No, because this is not, let's call it a confidential type of document. This is not official county business as far as you are concerned. When you get this, you are like a member of the public. Not only are you getting it, but you being from Town of Campbell, the Town of Campbell board is getting it too.
Right.
So just as somebody couldn't go and say, I want to see Scott Johnson's email because he got this thing from the county, yours would not
going to happen. So then this is actually going to save us some money because you won't have to mail out Steve's monthly report.
You'll get it sooner in some cases.
Yeah, I mean,
once we get up and running.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Except for the county board members that don't have email, they will continue to get that. This will save Terry time. It will be just one list, and it will also go to the public so the public knows what your department heads are reporting on. So it's really bringing in the public into a way that they've never had access to on information you're already getting, and it helps you and the people you serve be more up to date on what's happening in the county.
Well, quite frankly, I can't even get into my county email, so this is a good thing.
Yeah. Sharon Hampson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think that this is anything that the board needs to deal with at all. It's not about the county board. It's a staff decision, and Steve O'Malley had the good grace to consult with Steve Doyle and some other county board members to get opinions. And the other point is we've talked about PR since O'Malley came. So we're finally doing something. I think it's about time. And there's a lot of squawking on the national level about things done that look like closed government. Well, this is open government. This is telling the public this is what your taxpayer dollars are used for. And I see no negatives to it at all. Thank you.
Don Meyer.
Interesting what Sharon said. Many years ago, there was a public relations committee that never went anywhere, never went. We just didn't do anything before your time, Steve. And I did hear you on the radio publicizing this today, and you sounded great. Let's move on.
Any other comments? Mr. Ebert.
No, I'm not necessarily against it. I just think the process that you instituted, I think it's probably a great idea. I just think that there should be some rules of what will be followed for submissions from board members or whatever. That's what I'm doing. Getting the information out is a wonderful idea. It's cheap, it's good. But I just think, and apparently you talk to some folks and not others, and let's just have a set of rules, and this is what, you know, would be. And I think, again, a courtesy to let all of us know rather than read an email or I heard it on Wisdom. I'm not arguing with the afterthought. It's the process of getting to where you got to. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Okay, let's go on to the next thing. Anybody have any conference reports? Jill Billings raised her hand awfully quick.
Thank you, Chairman Doyle. I'd like to talk with you tonight about the County Ambassador Program. Those who attended the Wisconsin Counties Association meetings in La Crosse in the fall maybe heard our new WCA President Alice Connors talk about her initiative during her two-year tenure, and it's called the County Ambassador Program, or CAP. And the idea behind it is that she would recruit people from all 72 counties, staff and supervisors, to sit on a committee to have discussions with lawmakers, to open up communication with people in the state legislature, and hopefully they'll be communicating with us, just to be a voice for issues that affect counties, that actions that the state take, and how it affects us who provide services in the front line. So I went on Wednesday yesterday with Supervisor Tara Johnson. We went on our own dime. Everybody goes on their own dime. Well, it was her dime. I paid for parking. She paid for gas. And so it's not in the county tax levy. And we had a nice introduction to the issues that we would be discussing with legislators. We had set up appointments with our three local reps, and we talked about state public defender representation, upping the indigency rate so the county wouldn't end up paying for more of that representation at a higher cost and a less effective and efficient manner than the public defender's office does. We talked about youth aids regarding juvenile correctional institution costs, and along with that, we talked about not automatically waiving 17-year-olds into adult court, but leaving it up to the judge, and leaving those 17-year-olds in our juvenile facility and asking the money to follow those juveniles into our juvenile facility. We talked about the local economic development financing authority to create sort of a conduit bond, and if you want more information about that or any of these issues, you can talk with us afterwards. We also talked about repealing the county tax rate limit, which hurts La Crosse. We're one of the 10 counties, we're, I think, the third that gets hurt the worst in this, and we've heard about this from Mr. O'Malley. In fact, I think he brought this to WCA's attention. So we had people talking about that. There were two other issues that we gave information on but didn't necessarily lobby strongly. We also we were able to talk about other issues that just relate to our area specifically. So we talked about high-speed rail and asked for any efforts that they could put forth to help make sure that high-speed rail comes through La Crosse on the Empire Builder route. And at noon, we met with, so we were able to meet with Senator Kapanke and his staff person. We met with Representative Schilling. She came out of committee meeting to meet with us. And we met with Representative Hipsch's staff person. He was in hearing, and he wasn't able to meet with us. But we left information and talked with his staff person, who seemed very capable. We also met with Representative Kathleen Weinhaut, who's from the district north of ours. She talked to us at noon about, and she could see the importance of having good communication between county and state. She likened it to a marriage that needs to be healthy, and along with her listening to us, the information that we have, she asked if we could also be communicating with our public, because we are here, more of us in the district, about some of the actions the state takes. And so along those lines, I think I'd be willing, although it's the first time I've heard about e-updates, I'd be willing to write up something on this CAP program for the e-updates if there's any interest.
No, that would be great. Bill Brockmiller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if it's a convention or conference report per se, but I'm the board's representative to LADCO, and in the January meeting, they went over some that I attended on behalf of the board, some measurements of 2009 and what they accomplished. And I know that on the on a future agenda will be upcoming talk of what other organizations or entities get some part of county money, and LADCO being one of them. I thought this was something I wanted to mention. In 2009, LADCO recorded five new business startup assistants and or new tenants in the incubator on the north side, the business incubator, 5 retention expansion projects, 4 new projects, attractment of new businesses. In 2009, they created or retained 225 jobs in the county. Personally, as an economist, I feel that's actually kind of a conservative estimate. But even based on that, 225 in what would most would consider a down year was good. And they added in 2009 about $34,000 in value to property tax. In other words, increased the property tax, the value of property in the county by about $34,000. Now, 2009, as we all know, being by many measures a bad year, over the last 3 years, they actually increased value in the county by just, well, $376,000. So when we're looking at things that do we get bang for our buck and is it worth our while or worth levy or other county tax dollar funds, I would think that LADCO's investment is pretty clear success for us.
Anybody else have any reports? Arlene Van Rood.
Thank you, Chairman Doyle. On Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of last week was a winter highway conference at the Kalahari in the Dells. 515 registered attendees, and was up from last year by 50 more. They're still working on a new transportation budget, and they're having a reduction of the DOT employees. They're not in favor of a countywide assessor. The stimulus money has not been paid out yet. There were job retentions, not job creations. After the election this fall, they want to amend the Constitution to protect segregated transportation funds. They would like it on the fall ballot. One of our keynote speakers was Mark O'Connell, Executive Director of Wisconsin Counties Association. Also, Jeff Schrader, Ralph, Gary, and Leon Paff attended all the meetings. So if they have anything to say, thank you.
Leon Paff.
Thank you. Yes, just adding to that a little bit, I attended the... We'll start over with this one. This one work?
That one works.
I attended the machinery meetings and the fuel and expense meetings, and fuel for the county highways departments was down about 8 to 9% in cost from the previous year, which is a good sign because of the price. Same amount used approximately. But getting back to that part what Arlie just mentioned, and that was the possibility of an amendment to the Constitution to keep the transportation funds segregated away so that the legislature can't raid them. This is a very good possibility that they're going to be sending out to the local highway funds and the county boards to ask us to put an advisory referendum on the ballot this fall that would say that the legislature can't do that in the future, because they claim that both Minnesota and Iowa it is not done. But other than that, there was a good convention, and about it, but that was a highlight. I thought of the thing is to get the funds back to where they are, because it's getting to be a lot of money. Thank you.
Any other reports? Jeff Schrader.
I wasn't going to say anything, but there was something that I thought was pretty exciting that has impacted a lot of us around here. In fact, they had a big dispute in Vernon County with the disposition of fly ash. And had a lecture from University of Madison, UW-Madison, Professor Craig Benson, and it was the benefits of fly ash, and they're now incorporating it with in highways. And there's two or three different classes of fly ash. Hank's out here. He probably knows all that stuff. But anyway... It makes a great workable platform. It's very durable and high carbon ash coupled with recycled asphalt make a very durable product. And this is a subcourse below what they would put on for asphalt or concrete, but it makes a a subsurface that's almost the texture or the stability of low or lean concrete, they call it, and it doesn't have any impacts on groundwater, trace elements are very minimal, and there's I think they have five or six sites around. There's two over in Minnesota. One is over by Waseca. That's the closest one to here. But it was, I thought it was pretty exciting, something to, that we're finally getting a green product out of some of our waste. And it was also, it was interesting talking about, you know, some of the other counties about how they're handling the maintenance of, with the reduced funds. So that, it was a good conference.
Thank you, Mr. Schrader. Anybody else have any? Ralph Geary.
Thank you. I was at the conference also with Leon, but when he was talking about funding, I think Denny's going to try to get Craig Thompson down from the TDA. He's making out a presentation for all the counties, and Denny said he was going to try to get him out of policy planning. This financing thing is pretty complicated. He isn't finger-pointing and said, well, this administration or the previous one or the one in the 80s or something, because of the way they do money. They're trying to get the counties to get some kind of long-term solution to stabilize the highway funding for years to come. But he's working up a big presentation, and he said he's going to be trying to get to all the county boards that would like to hear his presentation. He'll have a handout with much more detailed information on how he thinks we should proceed.
Any other reports? Okay, thank you all. Let's get on to Mr. O'Malley's administrative report.
Just very briefly, you have on your desk the upcoming meetings. It's on a pink sheet that Terry produced for you. The two dates I want to point out, because of the Wisconsin County's Legislative Conference, the 9th and 10th, Human Services, Health and Human Services has moved a week earlier, so it'll be February 2nd if you're interested in attending that, in addition to committee members. So it's moved 1 week earlier. It's still on a Tuesday. The Executive Committee was moved from Wednesday to Thursday and will be at 4 o'clock, again, because the 9th and 10th are the WCA Legislative Conference, and usually our Execs and Administrators group gets at the tail end of that conference, so I wouldn't be able to make it back for the Executive Committee, so they were kind enough to move it to Thursday. So if you're attending either one of those meetings, please note that. In addition to that, Supervisor Burke and I talked about judiciary and law. We did not make a decision to move that. We struggled getting a quorum, as you heard earlier. Again, just to reiterate what Chairman Doyle said, call in as early as you can that day so we can try to find somebody if you're not able to come to the meeting, and do it to the board chair, because that's one central focus. Actually, and I didn't want to belabor this point, but that particular meeting, everybody that wasn't able to make the meeting told us, but it was right up to the last minute, and it was several different sources. Someone called into the county clerk's office, somebody called into Margaret's. If you stay with the chair's office, then we at least know, and if you do it early enough, we can follow up. We understand things come up, and but we'll work with you on that. So those were the only two that I missed, and I don't know if Supervisor Burke wanted to mention something, Mr. Chair.
Just that I really did not poll the members to see if there were any interested in going to the legislative day, so could you possibly ask that question to the group? Yeah. Members of the Judiciary and Law,
any of you plan to go to the legislative conference in Madison that day? Mr. Ebert, Mr. Schrader?
Mr. Schrader's not on. Mr. Schrader's not on Judiciary and Law.
Okay. Okay, so Mr. Ebert is.
And this is also time to remind you, tomorrow is the absolute last deadline without a late fee if you are planning to go to WCA Legislative Conference, which is February 9th and 10th. Contact Margaret in the chair's office. She will make those reservations. I think we only have a few that are going so far. I believe Jeff is one of them, and I don't recall who else said are going.
And speaking of deadlines, I don't want to forget this. We got about a week left. If you have your mileage reimbursements for 2009, you need to get those in before the end of January. So if you haven't turned that in yet, get on it as quick as you can.
And Mr. Chair, one last item that's included on this is the February 8th planning meeting will be a very important meeting. We're inviting the City Council members to come and listen to a review of the collaboration conference presentation, which includes, for those of you that haven't looked at it, the challenging trends facing La Crosse County, which is out on our website. It's on the economic development website. We think it's very good information. We have had a lot of good feedback from folks that did attend the collaboration conference. This is probably the first time ever that we've had a, for lack of a better term, a joint meeting with the City Council of La Crosse talking about long-term challenging issues. It will actually be a meeting of the county board that we're inviting them, so it's not technically a joint meeting. Obviously, it will be chaired by our board chair, but particularly for members who are on the City Council, if you could encourage your members to come. I know that Council President Cotter attended the collaboration conference and saw that presentation, and we're just really encouraging. It's a good chance to expand communication between both bodies, and we're hoping that people come and can hear our presentation. Remember, at 5:30, we're going to start with the presentation by Carl Green on assessment issues. So if you've got a chance and haven't seen that presentation, that's also a good educational piece. Again, we just think it's important to get the information out to you. You'll give us direction on what kinds of decisions can be made, but it provides a good background on a lot of the complicated issues confronting our community, and really encourage you to try to be there. And if you know City Council members in La Crosse, please encourage them to attend, because we really think it's important to get this information out.
Audrey Cotter.
Thank you. We announced it at both Tuesday and Thursday's meetings. They got a handout on it, and perhaps the city county board members would make a point of making a phone call to their counterpart at City Hall. It's not always easy to get people to come to an extra meeting, but we certainly have encouraged it, and as I say, I would appreciate if the county board members would reach out to their counterparts.
Good idea.
Thank you.
Good suggestion. Anything else, Mr. O'Malley? Any other questions or comments for Mr. O'Malley? Okay, that gets us to the consent. Cards and correspondence are over on the board. No committee meetings during recess. So now we're at the consent agenda, moved by Roger Plesher to approve, seconded by Jerry Sobranek. Any questions or comments on that? Mr. Geary.
I'd like to make a correction. On the county board planning meeting of January 11th, Leon Paff and myself were marked absent. We attended the Winter Highway Conference, so not speaking for Leanne, but I assumed we were excused, but we forgot to call the clerk's office, but we were at a county function. So in the future, I'll call. I don't know about Leanne.
You know what they say when you assume.
I'll call in the future. I can't speak for Leanne, if you will.
All right. Jeff Schrader.
While we're on that subject, I remember if it was the start of this county board session 2 years ago, or when it was, and you were going to simplify asking, you know, or notifying someone that you weren't going to be at a meeting. You didn't have to call one or the other. It was going to be one person, and I can't remember who that was, if that was going to be...
it would be Margaret.
Be Margaret for missing any meeting.
As Linda pointed out, it also says on your agenda who you can call. If you don't call that person, though, Margaret, and if you need to call me, that's fine too. You know, but at my advanced age, my memory isn't so great. So you're best calling Margaret. That should be number one. Or if your pink sheet says something different, or else call me. But start with Margaret. All right. Or call Linda. She likes getting phone calls. But start with Margaret. That clear? Start with Margaret. All right. All in favor of the consent agenda, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. That gets us to planning, resource, and development. Mr. Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's the first time since I've been on zoning that we did not have a tour in the month of December because we had no applicants for wanting anything done. Therefore, we have on the agenda today items 1-6 through 1-15. They're all for terminations of items we put out in the past. All of these are been agreed to by the PRD committee and the owners of the properties. So I move for your approval to terminations 1-6 through 1-15.
Mr. Meyer moves for approval of all of those items that are terminations that were uncontested, seconded by Mr. Bina. Any discussion or questions on those? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Then we have Resolution 1/16. It's a designation of the Wright Farm as La Crosse County Historic Site. Whereas following a public hearing on October 2nd, 2009, the Historic Sites Preservation Commission approved adding the John and Raz Wright Farm, now owned by Daniel and Elizabeth Moan, as a historic site to La Crosse County Historic Sites listing. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board does hereby approve adding the Wright Farm as an historic site to La Crosse County Historic Sites listing. Be it further resolved that the designation of the Wright Farm as La Crosse County Historic Site shall be subject to the all provisions of Chapter 23 of the General Code of La Crosse County, and the resolution shall be recorded at the county's expense with La Crosse County Register of Deeds. Fiscal note is cost will be $13. I move for your approval.
Moved by Mr. Meyer, seconded by Mr. Brockmiller. Any discussion on this one? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
So we're at Resolution 1/17. It's approval of the Greenfield Land Use Map. First of all, thanks to Jeff Buschke, you have maps up front here that you can look at from the maps we approved last meeting, which were not too legible on your blue sheets, but Jeff has provided some bigger maps, and you can take a look at them. The Greenfield one is there. Whereas the Planning Resources Development Committee recommends that the La Crosse County Future Land Use Map is set forth in Section 31.03, Paragraph 4, Page 113, La Crosse Comprehensive Plan is amended to incorporate the land use districts adopted by the Town of Greenfield. Use Map Exhibition A, pursuant to Wisconsin Statute Section 66.1001, Paragraph 4. Now, therefore, be it resolved, La Crosse County Board does hereby approve the committee's recommendation that La Crosse County Comprehensive Plan Future Land Use Map be amended to include the land districts established by the Town of Greenfield and Exhibit A as a guide to future development activities and to aid the county board in performance of its duties. Be further resolved, La Crosse County Planner is directed to bring an ordinance to the county board at the appropriate time amending the La Crosse County Future Land Use Map, including the land use districts adopted by the Town of Greenfield and the approved plans for local government units. There's no physical impact, La Crosse County. I move for your approval.
Moved by Mr. Meyer, seconded by Mr. Montai. Any discussion? Mr. Geary.
Thank you. I noticed on the bottom that the administrator, the finance director, the corp counsel, you signed reviewed only. And on some of them, they get signed recommended, and some of them maybe not recommended. Since it was drafted by corp counsel, obviously, I think his position should be reviewed only since he drew it up. But on previous townships or whatever, the administrator was talking about urban sprawl or something. We didn't want housing developments out in the middle of nowhere because then we got a more. How does this affect that or whatever?
I have really discouraged the staff from doing anything more than putting reviewed only. These are policy issues. This is for you. If you have a question of them, they're certainly happy
right,
to express
but I've
their opinion.
But in the past, the administrator, I think it was Town on Alaska, I could be mistaken, but we're talking about urban sprawl, and he was making the point that they don't want to put housing developments out in the 20 miles down the road with five-acre plots or something, and da-da-da-da-da. So on previous ones, I thought he was making a kind of a position on it.
I'm still against urban sprawl, and let's make sure that we're still struggling with exactly how to use this. We're trying to get better. There are times where we recommend where we just have a strong and it's more than an opinion, it's a professional opinion. I think that's where I asserted myself on what's happening with a lot of the vacant lots and that type of thing. But we're trying to get more focused and use this consistently. I can't say we always do that. This will be one of 13 items crossing my desk at the time, and I just tried to do the best I can. But I want to be clear, I'm still against urban sprawl.
Nice for not answering my question. But maybe Jeff Blusky can. Are we getting housing developments in the future, or we got land set aside, big plots or areas or
Jeff,
something?
You want to come on in? Okay, can you clarify your question to Mr. Blusky?
Well, when the county comprehensive plan came in, one of the things they were talking about was try to minimize this urban sprawl and not get these. So looking at this map, I'd say for most people it may be difficult to figure out how much acreage or whatever they've set aside for housing developments or things of this nature. And is it near the main roads or is it 20 miles down a town road?
Okay, there's really two things that are happening during this process, board members. If you take, I know it's kind of hard to see the larger map, but the map that's on the right up there is the town of Greenfield's proposal that they have approved at the local level after going through about a year of study. The green areas are the areas that they would like to remain residential. The yellow areas are the areas that are already residential or proposed to be expanded into residential. And the red areas are the areas designated for or are currently being used as commercial. Each municipality, as of the first of the year, is required to have a plan like this. What we're asking for the supervisors to approve is the use of that map in our land use determinations as well, because we don't have a map. We are using the town maps. So the second part of this is the portion about a little over a year ago where the town of Onalaska requested an amendment to their original land use map. And that's what we were, and the committee and the county board had turned down because it was placing sprawl farther out in the community than it should happen. And in all the land use plans, we're seeing that development is being pushed in on account of sustainability and everything that we're talking about, the services that the other 28 departments are have to service. You can't keep driving farther and farther away out into the country to serve some of these areas. You have to pull these people back in, so they've got transportation needs and where a lot of the jobs are located. So those are the things that we're just trying to discover in this process. And do we end up agreeing with the towns in a lot of cases? Yes, because that's our job. So the state is indicating now that every single land use decision has to be consistent with these maps. The only thing they have not done is define the word consistent. Is it 100% of the time? Is it 80% of the time? And we are keeping track of that for you if you want to know that.
Terry Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jeff, are you sure green is residential or green is ag?
It's ag.
Okay.
Yellow is... I'm sorry.
I thought I heard you say the green was residential.
The green is agriculture.
Okay.
Yellow is residential.
Yeah. I also want to make sure I'm correct in remembering. I think we asked the same set of questions of Charlie either last month or the month before when we had three municipalities bring their maps forward. And part of what he described as this series of events that are taking place to have the county comp plan and then the municipality's comp plans and try and weave them together.
Right.
Is that this resolution is really saying, great, Greenfield, you came up with a map, terrific. The next step is what is the further resolved is that there will be a resolution coming from staff on amending our land use map.
That's correct.
So tonight's decision is really just about affirming their work, and some of the policy stuff that Supervisor Geary has raised may in fact come up in our debate when that resolution comes forward.
That's right.
Thank you.
That's right. That's correct.
Don Bina.
I thank you, Mr. Chair. Tara said just about what I was going to say. This map, and that doesn't happen often, does it, Tara?
But he will repeat what you said. Go ahead, Don.
This map is the town's work that they did with all the public hearings they held and all of the input they got from each one of the voters who wanted to have input. And what we are doing, we are carte blanche accepting it as their plan. It doesn't mean that that plan is consistent with our plan, and that's where the difference will come with the PRD committee at some point when they are asked to amend their plan because they are changing their mind down the road some years from now. So there is the possibility of change, but this is the town's plan, and it doesn't mean that we in the county have to agree or disagree with it. We're accepting it as they put it together. Thank you.
Vicki Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make the point that the green was agricultural, I thought.
Okay. Any other discussion or questions on this one? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. That it for you, Mr. Meyer?
That's it.
Thank you, sir.
Long time.
Executive Committee, Tara Johnson.
I have item 1-18 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding acknowledging the best of public service. Whereas the following employees have been a faithful part in providing the best of public service to La Crosse County, namely Cheryl Hansen in the Health Department, correction, it should read 33-plus years, and Joseph P. Brown in the Sheriff's Department, 32-plus years. Whereas it is the wish of the County Board of Supervisors to acknowledge long and faithful service on behalf of the citizens of La Crosse County, now therefore be it resolved that a resolution extending our congratulations be recorded in La Crosse County Board proceedings and a certificate of our actions be presented as an expression of our gratitude. I move its approval.
Moved by Tara Johnson, second by Vicki Burke. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 1-19 is the second reading of an ordinance to amend certain sections of 2.04 paren 10 paren B of Chapter 2, the Code of Ethics of the General Code of La Crosse County, Wisconsin, regarding the Ethics Board. And I would just draw your attention that there is a corrected item 119 that should have been on your desk, which is, in fact, the same as item 1234 from our December meeting. There was an error made in the version one of this ordinance that went into our packets. So the one on the desk is the correct one and is the same as the one we got in December for the first reading. And I move its approval.
Moved by Vicki Burke. Is there a second? Seconded by Jill Billings.
Vicki Burke. I'm Tara.
Did I say Vicki Burke?
Yes.
I was looking at Vicki Burke. Second by Tara Johnson. Just a clarification, Ms. Johnson.
Yes.
Is this the version then that the executive committee approved?
The one that's on the desk
is the one
that the executive committee approved.
Okay.
The one that went in the packet was the older version before the corrections were made.
Thank you.
That was the error.
Discussion. Jeff Schrader.
Yeah, yours quit. Oh, maybe everybody's quit.
Okay, it's on.
Okay, so we're supposed to disregard the $5,000 here, and we're supposed to disregard the fact that anything that's brought down by the Essex Committee has to go before a three-quarter vote of the county board. Is that the two things that are missing in the new one?
Ms. Johnson?
Yes.
Thank you.
And when was that taken out, and why was it taken out?
It was taken out in executive committee at the December executive committee meeting. Both of those amendments that came from the floor, when the notion of the changes to the ethics board were originally made, which I know you, Supervisor Schrader, remember vividly because you were involved in a certain example that the...
What was that? What did that
something
involve?
About oranges or bananas or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So following that
discussion... Let's not bring up the past, all right?
Following,
I learned my lesson.
Following that discussion, at the county board meeting, the ordinance was redrafted, and that went to executive committee. And in executive committee, there were edits made and amendments, and those included the removal of the $5,000 clause, and it's not really a clause, but portion of it, and the other one that you just mentioned that I can't remember. The three-quarter vote. Yeah, those were both debated. They were in the executive committee discussion back in December.
So this is the first time that we've seen this in front of us.
No. The version that was on your desk tonight is the same version that was in your packet for the December meeting when this ordinance received its first reading.
Right.
The error was made in an incorrect version going into the packet for tonight's meeting.
So this version right here gives the Ethics Board much more power than they had in our old version that...
I guess that's a matter of debate. I wouldn't agree with that. But this is what was debated in executive. This is the version that was approved by the executive committee.
Right, and I'll ask Bill Shepard that then. Doesn't this ordinance give the Ethics Board a much more authority because they don't? It's nothing's brought before the county board.
Well, that was the ordinance that you passed. Back in November, I believe. The only change that was made is in this ordinance is the number of days in which the Ethics Board has to hold a hearing and that they have to put their ruling in a written order and explain the reasons for imposing sanctions. Those are the only changes that were made to the ordinance that you previously passed.
I guess I'm going to have to take your word for that because I don't have the other one before me.
Jill Billings has it. She'll share it with you. We'll come back to you then, Mr. Schrader, if you want to have a chance to look at that. Mr. Ebert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'd like to offer an amendment to subsection 11A. It would cap the amount of the cost that may be assessed against a party for a frivolous complaint at $5,000.
Is there a second to that amendment? Is there a second to that amendment? Second by Mr. Bina. Discussion on the amendment.
May I retain the floor then?
Absolutely.
Yeah, my thing is we haven't had anything at all, and all of a sudden we're going to do this, and I think it's good, the frivolous case. My problem is that two people on the ethics committee could get together and assess, and it has to be a reasonable fee, but if depending on what lawyer you get or whatever, how much time, it could be tens of thousands of dollars. And I think for this preliminary thing, $5,000 would be a nice enough to make someone certainly think about filing a frivolous case, and yet still keep it where people are not going to be intimidated not to file a case that may or may not be. So I would move that we pass this amendment.
Discussion. Joe Veenstra.
I was one of the people that moved to remove the $5,000 provision in the executive committee, and the reason was that we have had a multitude of examples of frivolous complaints in the civil arena, one of which we discussed at the last county board meeting, if I remember right. That included someone who has filed a lawsuit, lost, was told by a judge once that the lawsuit was frivolous, was awarded attorney's fees, appealed to the Court of Appeals, was told that lawsuit was frivolous, appealed to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court refused to accept the case, probably because there was no reason for them to accept it whatsoever, and has since filed another lawsuit, including suing several staff members at the Clerk of Courts, every judge that made the decision on the Court of Appeals, and whatnot. The reason why the $5,000 limitation doesn't make sense is because if somebody does not follow reason and logic, which is what you're applying to your explanation for wanting to cap it at $5,000, that isn't going to work in this situation. you could tell some people that they could be assessed $1 million and they won't care. However, what this will do is allow somebody who is subject to a frivolous complaint to at least have some potential for being compensated when someone refuses to follow logic and reason and files numerous frivolous complaints. Will this happen ever? Who knows? But I think there's the idea that the ethics board is going to just willy-nilly accept whatever fees are proposed by a party who convinces them that a lawsuit is frivolous. You know, they have, I guess you have to, one of the reasons why we have an ethics board that's somewhat separate from the county board is to, it's because we don't want to have them influenced by us. And that's the reason why I wanted it out of there. I hope it never happens, but there are situations that arise that $5,000 isn't going to be enough. So that's why.
Mr. Shepard just pointed out to me that the people who are suing us now have a website. If you want to look at what they have to say about us, you go to their website. Jill Billings.
When I was looking over this ordinance, I talked to a friend of mine who's an attorney. It wasn't Joe Veenstra, Supervisor Veenstra.
How good of a friend was it?
and I said, well, you know, what does it take to become frivolous, for something to be frivolous? And it sounds like it has to be to meet that definition or that criteria of frivolous is beyond the pale. It's obvious that something is just not warranted to become a frivolous complaint. So it's not like a normal everyday complaint is going to become frivolous. It's something that's obviously beyond the pale. And so I think my feeling as a layperson was, if you cap that at 5,000, what you're sort of doing is punishing, you know, Joe Blow, who happens to get the suit put against them, and they have to represent themselves anything beyond $5,000, even if it's something that's frivolous. The person who's accused is stuck paying all those attorney fees beyond $5,000. So someone who's, you know, kind of out there beyond the pale, maybe not thinking logically, could ride this and ride this and ride this, and the person that's accused ends up still being punished even though they didn't do anything wrong because they have to pay those attorney fees. So all this is doing is, you know, you've got the safe harbor so that if someone finds out, ooh, this sort of looks frivolous, that protects the person who's bringing the suit. I just think a cap is kind of unfair to the person that gets accused.
Maureen Friedland.
Thank you. I asked some questions last month about the judicial review of actions that would go before the ethics board, and Mr. Shepard said that the finding of a frivolous lawsuit is something that could be judicially reviewed, and I think that that's very important. I think that would probably also apply to whatever attorney's fees are assessed, that the reasonableness of those fees is something that could go before a judge later on to determine if those fees are appropriate or not. And wouldn't that be the case? Don't you think?
Yes, I think that's right. And, you know, whether the board acted arbitrarily or capriciously is usually a basis for a court to reverse their actions.
Right. And while I voted against this ordinance back in November because I thought that it created barriers to people challenging governmental actions and in effect acted to close the doors to the county building, to justice in some sort of ways, I do agree that once we have this ordinance and once the ethics board does find that something is frivolous, that the attorney's fees ought to be assessed as they should be. And if they go up more than $5,000, then they go up more than $5,000, and the person who is having to defend this action needs to be paid back for their attorney's fees and shouldn't have to pay anything unnecessarily. So I would support leaving this out and just I don't think that the amendment is something that we need to have right now.
On the amendment, Jim Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do appreciate Mr. Ebert's logic in proposing this cap. I guess my question is this, though. How much does $5,000 get today with attorneys and, I mean, representation? And Mr. Doyle, is $5,000, I mean, how much representation do you get for $5,000? And it doesn't seem like how – I'm not – not Mr. Doyle. There's other attorneys in the room here, but
upon the advice of counsel, I refuse to answer that question.
It doesn't seem like it. Just doesn't seem like it. Seems like a number that is a little low on the low side. I don't know.
I would say that the average hourly rate in La Crosse these days is probably somewhere between $150 and $200 an hour. Joe, would you agree? Somewhere in that range. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further discussion on the amendment, Mr. Geary?
So as it is right now, the costs are basically unlimited. I mean,
Mr. Shepherd, do you want to respond to that?
Well, they're not unlimited because the ethics board has the discretion to determine the reasonableness of the attorney's fees. I mean, if somebody submits a bill for $100,000 and they put 2 hours of work on it, I don't think there's any way that this ethics board is going to assess that. So, you know, they don't have to take the whole amount as the attorney says, you know, I'm entitled to. They can use their discretion in determining what is fair and reasonable.
Okay. Well, let's say somebody doesn't prevail. Are they obligated for the attorney's costs?
This is only if there's a finding of frivolousness.
The ethics board has to say it was frivolous. If the ethics board says it wasn't frivolous but they didn't prevail, then they won't be liable for attorney's fees unless that was handled through civil court or something?
Yeah, many cases are won or lost, and there are not assessment of attorney's fees. So there would only be assessment of attorney's fees if it's been determined to be frivolous, and I think Ms. Billings described, you know, that it is something beyond the pale. I would agree with that description in lay terms that it's not something. Just, you know, there may be close questions, and you know, a complainant may lose, but it doesn't go into the frivolous realm.
And what other counties have this? Do any other counties in the state have this ordinance or whatever we got?
I don't know. I know many counties have ethics codes. We didn't pull counties on this issue, no.
Joe Bilskemper.
Thank you. I was okay until Mr. Shepherd just said many cases are won or lost without assessment of attorney fees. Now, when was the last time anybody hired an attorney without paying them?
No, that the other side has awarded attorney fees.
That's what I meant. I'm sorry if I wasn't clear on
yeah.
that. Yeah. Where there was a,
you were not talking about the person defending himself.
No. I guess what I was saying is that the loser is not automatically assessed attorney's fees. That would be a better way to say it. Thank
it doesn't
you
doesn't mean he won't have attorney fees, though.
The loser
if each pays their own.
Thank you for clarifying that.
I'm sorry if I wasn't clear about that, Mr. Bilskemper.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Okay, the amendment is to add a $5,000 cap. If you are in favor of that of adding the $5,000 cap, say yes. If you are opposed, say no. All in favor of that amendment, say aye or yes.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Can the ayes raise your hand? They are. Ray Ebert. Don Bina, Ralph Geary, and Jeff Schrader. The amendment fails. We are back on the proposed ordinance. Any further discussion? All in favor of the ordinance then as presented, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The noes, please raise your hand. They are Mr. Ebert, Mr. Bina, Mr. Geary, and Mr. Schrader. The ordinance passes. Next item, Tara Johnson.
Item 1-20 is an ordinance to repeal Section 30.81, Parent 10, regarding no wake zones of the General Code of La Crosse County. This is actually its first reading, but I yield the floor to Supervisor Don Meyer, who I believe is going to ask for a suspension of the rules so we can vote on it this evening.
Correct.
I yield the floor to Supervisor Meyer.
Mr. Meyer.
I'd like to suspend the rules and vote on this tonight. It's just a housekeeping deal. Nobody's going to do any research on it to change it. So I'd like to call for a vote to suspend the rules and move ahead.
Mr. Meyer moves to suspend the rules, seconded by Audrey Cotter, to suspend the rules to vote on it tonight.
Correct.
Discussion on suspension of the rules. Mr. Geary.
It may be a housekeeping item, then it should be held over for 30 days. Usually we suspend the rules if we're up against a timeline, we've got to get this in by a certain date or something happens. You know, we suspend the rules a lot for things that really probably shouldn't get suspended for. I don't have any problem voting for it tonight or next month, but I don't see the purpose of defeating our rules. That's why the 30 days is in effect, unless there's really some emergency or something that requires us to do something.
It allows us to take care of business tonight and don't wait 30 days because it's unnecessary.
Further discussion on the motion to suspend the rules. Jim Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that may seem innocuous and okay, but what about the opportunity for the public to comment on these ordinances? And the public also has a chance to contact their representative and weigh in on issues. And I would tend to err on the side of this may be housekeeping, may not be. But I think in the interest of the public and having, being consistent with our process as much as possible, I think we should really exercise very, very careful. It should be used very sparingly is what I'm trying to say. Thank you.
Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Supervisor Meyer, did the Harbor Commission hold a public hearing on this?
No, it's never been enforced in French Lou. I'm wondering if anyone here knows where French Lou is. It's just not been enforced, and it was thought that we'd clean up the ordinance by removing it. It's very simple. Nobody's going to come in here and talk against this by any means.
The motion is to suspend the rules. Discussion on suspension of the rules. Jeff Schrader.
I'll ask this question, and were the business owners there? Were they polled on this?
I could not answer that, Mr. Schrader.
Well, then I concur with what Supervisor Burns' his concerns are. Mine would be the same.
John Menninger.
Yeah, I know on suspension you're supposed to talk about this suspension, but it's hard to talk about this without knowing where did this come from? Why is it here? I don't like these yahoos going 90 miles an hour down the river anytime.
This isn't the river, it's
French Lou. Just a second, Mr. Meyer.
It's got water, doesn't it? Where did it come from?
Bill,
why doesn't it go to the Harbor Commission?
Bill Shepard is going to respond. We'll let Mr. Meyer collect himself for a minute first.
I don't know if I can.
Dave Lang has worked with the Harbor Commission on this issue, and I do have a part of Dave's file with me. Larry Kirch from the city asked the county repeal this ordinance, that the city has already done so. Apparently, they've never placed buoys out there indicating that this was a no or a slow wake or no wake zone. So it wasn't enforceable anyway. The city decided that for their portion, it should be eliminated and recommended that the county do the same. So that's where it came from. It came from the city.
Further discussion on suspension. Mr. Bina.
I guess it's the principle of the thing. You know, if you would have gave us an explanation with what happened here, it might be a hell of a lot easier to digest than getting excited about it. I really think we ought to hold it over for 30 days and have Dick Miles write an article in the paper and see what kind of response we get.
I knew when I saw the short agenda tonight that we were in trouble. Ann Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really don't quite get why we're debating this so long, since nobody's going to be out on the river in the next couple of months anyhow. So, you know, what difference does it make? I mean, there's ice out there now, so, and there will be ice next month, so I think we could wait and vote on it next month.
The motion is to suspend the rules to vote on it tonight. Any further discussion on suspension of the rules? All in favor of suspending the rules to vote on it tonight, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Okay, we're going to vote on the computer. If you are in favor of suspending the rules, vote yes. If you are opposed, vote no. Two-thirds vote is required.
I know, I've been so stupid. Huh? I went down the Dragon and Anchor.
The motion to suspend the rules has failed. It received 18 out of 34 votes, and that was 52.9%. It takes two-thirds vote, so that failed. So we will hold this over till next month.
Item 1-21. We'll try this one. To the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors. Just so everyone knows, this is the white paper copy that was on your desk that has the numerals stricken and changed in pen. This is resolution, it should have been on your desk, and it's resolution 1-21 regarding approval of existing LEC security system revisions, video visitation, intercom, and overhead paging. Whereas it was the intention of county staff to include video visitation, intercom, and overhead paging in all areas of the jail, including the existing cell blocks, and whereas due to miscommunication during the initial design phase of the LEC addition, these systems were included in the construction specifications for the new and remodeled areas of the jail, but were not included in existing cell blocks that are not being remodeled. And whereas the design and construction teams have quoted a total cost of $113,984 to install video visitation, intercom, and overhead paging in the existing unremodeled areas of the jail. And whereas the 2009 special assessment jail improvement budget has sufficient funds to cover the cost of this additional expense, now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors does hereby authorize revisions to the existing LEC security system in the amount of $113,984 to include video visitation, intercom, and overhead paging in the existing areas of the jail. The fiscal note is that funds that had originally been reserved in the Special Assessment Jail Improvement Org for improvements in the LEC building and jail were not spent because remodeling of the existing jail was included in the overall construction project. Funds to cover the security system revisions will be transferred from the Special Assessment Jail Org to the LEC Construction Fund as follows. I move its approval.
Moved by Terry Johnson. Is there a second? Second by Vicki Burke. Discussion.
If I could just note that in executive committee at 5:30 this evening, the revised version of this resolution was approved unanimously.
Thank you. Discussion or questions? Ralph Geary.
Yes, I think the architect and the construction manager ought to split this cost between themselves and absorb it themselves. When we hired these people, we hired them for their expertise. We're going to make this building work well together. It's going to fit hand in glove. It's going to function well. da-da-da-da-da. The construction manager we hired was going to look out for our interests. Somehow during the process, they, who are our experts, who are getting paid a very good sum, omitted this. If it would have been put in the thing originally, the cost probably would have been much lower if it had been in the original plans. I think it's an error and omission. I think either one or the other should have caught it, and if they didn't, they should at least step to the plate and do it. I don't see why the taxpayer has to fund other people's mistakes, and I clearly think they dropped the ball and they should pay for it.
I probably should have called on Mr. O'Malley to explain that, in fact, that is what is happening here, that they are splitting that. Mr. O'Malley.
Recognize that the number that was in the original resolution was reduced after direction by the executive committee. The executive committee asked us very specifically to go back to the design team, go back to the contractor, go back to the construction manager, and review. The fact is that if we would have had 10 additional monitors and the entire system for the existing cell blocks in the bid at the original date, we would have paid more. It wouldn't have been free. If you add that many more monitors, you're not going to get those for free. The design team stepped forward and worked with us and reduced this amount and are absorbing this, even though there was not additional design money paid to Potter Lawson. We actually fixed that dollar amount, so that oversight was already absorbed by them in the design. They're also absorbing part of this cost by reducing the number from the 123 to the 113. And have absorbed this cost, and that was actually negotiated at the direction of the executive committee. There is no way that you would have or the public would have received all of these additional monitors and the entire installation for zero additional dollars had it been included. It would have been a part of the bid, and the design team has been very strong in working with us and taking responsibility for this miscommunication between us.
Sharon Hampson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it would be very helpful if the rest of the board heard what we heard at our special executive committee meeting about the 5%, 6%, and whether we need 10 and all that, because that was very informative.
Mr. O'Malley, can you cover that?
Certainly. The total dollar amount of $123,000 is actually made up of three separate components, $93,000 for Stanley, which is actually the supplier of the technical equipment, $27,000 for Kish, who is the electrical main contractor that Stanley works as a subcontractor, and $2,700 for Market and Johnson. Kish, the best we can figure is that there would have been about a 5% savings had this been included on bid date. There would have been about a 6% savings on the Stanley amount, and those two amounts plus the elimination of the Market and Johnson fee amount to $9,700. So there was an analysis and a professional look at how we would have expected to make out on this had this been included in the original bid. It would have been a smaller amount by the best estimate we can put together, about $9,711.
Further discussion or questions? Jeff Schrader.
Thank you. When was it that we put video conferencing in the jail? And I guess another part of that question was that added to the then old jail here?
I'm going to ask the sheriff to come in and talk about that.
And I guess the other part of the question is if that is the case, then could those not be incorporated?
The old
system, if it was in place there, I don't know if it was.
Sheriff, did you hear the question?
I'm not sure I completely understand what's being asked.
So. I think his first question is there existing video conferencing equipment in the jail?
No, we don't currently have any video conferencing system in our jail in any location.
Enough said. I thought when they put it in the then new jail that it was placed in there also, but I'm mistaken, I guess.
No, we don't have any videos. Conferencing.
Any other questions or discussion? Mr. Bina.
I guess I did. Sheriff, could you? I have a question for you, too, if I may.
Sure.
I sat in the meeting, and I listened kind of intently to find out who screwed up and what happened. When did you decide that you wanted these pods put in there? Was it before the jail started and we put our budget together, or was it after that?
No, it was before it was part of the entire project that the county board had approved, and we had talked about the video visitation and the benefits of the video visitation before the county board approved the project.
I know there was talk, but I haven't been involved in that system, and I didn't know, and I didn't hear you say at that meeting when you may have decided, but that was supposed to be in the plan when we put our budget together for the jail in that case then.
That's correct. It was the decision that was made early on when we were designing what the facility would look like.
Okay. Then it was in the planning stages because I wasn't involved in it, so I didn't know exactly when you presented it. I guess we approved a $29.5 million budget, which we exceeded at least once already. We hired a consultant who was going to keep us out of trouble for $500,000 or thereabouts, and I don't have those exact figures right here. And now we are asking that there should be more money spent, which should have been into the system. I'm not sure if we should even pay anything on this. I know it's nice to have, and we should have had it in there if it was in the plan. And I would expect that the people who are telling us how to build that jail should be responsible for much more than what they are accepting at this point in time. They are supposed to be keeping us out of trouble and not in trouble. And I'm speaking in behalf of a fair amount of people who cornered me on the newspaper article, which I brought along, which does say, and Dick Mile put it together, for $124,000 extra. One of these days, what we should have had it, you know, we talk about open government, and we talked about it for 15, 20 minutes earlier tonight. Why didn't we have a planning meeting on what we have here as a proposal now? Nobody in the county board has heard this except for the people who are sitting in the room on the other side. I'm not sure. We are making decisions here, and we're increasing the budget, and it's not within the $29.5 million anymore.
Mr. Bean, I'm going to stop you on that point.
Okay,
you've now
ahead.
Said that twice, and that is incorrect. We have not gone over $29.5
million. I
beg your pardon
on that
one. Mr. O'Malley.
I'm going to clarify several things. Number one, this wasn't the executive committee. This was the Law Enforcement Center Construction Committee that it began with, and then as a finance matter, by county board rule, goes to executive committee as well. This has involved a great number of the board members who are responsible for this. The LEC Construction Committee is the primary committee for oversight, number one. The only time that you've actually exceeded the $29.5 million is due to the probation and parole lease, which you have legitimately made a decision to go ahead and do that and to fund it separately to stay within the $29.5 million. We have not authorized any additional debt. We have not gone over that dollar amount. The effect, if you vote down this resolution, because that's what you're contemplating, is only that you won't have video visitation in the existing jail. Okay, that's not the end of the world. It will change all of the policies and put more labor on the sheriff and his jail staff to actually be as innovative as possible. You can then come back later and add this at a much higher cost with after the project's all done and pay for it the way I've recommended, which is jail assessment dollars, which you've underspent this year. So this money actually allows you to spend money, which, by the way, you can only spend jail assessment dollars on jail capital and jail expenses. It's a legitimate use of those dollars. This is not trying to find a way to use money that wasn't applied to the 29.5 addition. This is to clarify a communication of how the operation of the jail should be. If you vote this down, if you don't have the two-thirds vote to do it, all you're going to do is wait until the new jail is LEC is done, the addition is done, and have to come back and revisit it again. While the whole system is being installed is a more cost-effective way to do that. The sheriff has said he and his staff are working how to make sure that inmates and their families and the attorneys and probation, parole, and justice sanctions have closer and better interaction with the people that are in the jail and can help them in turning their lives around. This is a tool that we discussed a long time ago, way back last August before the bids were even put out. We spent a lot of time and energy into this. We had an actual presentation on it. The point is, this does not put you over the budget. because it is not for the addition. This is in the existing jail. You can still vote it down. You can still say it's not useful. That's a policy decision. But that's the effect of voting this down. And this came out of the LEC Construction Committee that has been with us every step along the way, monitoring month by month or every other month the financials on this. And then it came to Executive Committee. This had no interest in excluding board members.
Sheriff, can you touch on that topic of video visitations? Let make sure people understand what it is and why you've asked for it.
Sure. Well, if you recall, looking at our jail, we've had, I believe, four successful suicides, many, many suicide attempts in any given year. We've had as many as 175 suicide threats or attempts. We've had many assaults, inmates on inmates. We've had many staff hurt. So we took a look at the jail and looked, what can we do differently to make the jail safer, to make it a better place, not only for the inmates, but for our staff as well. One of the things that we looked at was throughout the country, evidence-based practices that have worked elsewhere, best practices, and one of the things that we found is over and over again is that the more contact that inmates can have with loved ones and their families, the better the outcomes, not only while they're in jail as far as a management tool for us, but also once they're released, that keeping those connections are very important. So along with that, when we designed the jail, we looked at how could we more quickly get people out of jail. And so we included the justice sanctions in that same addition, and we're including probation and parole in that same addition. Part of that is so that there's more communication with justice sanctions and probation and parole with the clients that they have in jail to see what we can do to keep them moving through the system. So we've designed probation and parole will have one of these video visitation booths in their area as well as justice sanctions. We also know that the more available we can make the inmates and the easier it is for their defense attorneys to get to the inmates to talk with them about their cases, the quicker the cases can potentially move through the court system. So there is a number of reasons that we felt it was very important that we incorporate the video visitation. It doesn't eliminate necessarily the face-to-face contact for visitation, but here's the problem with that now. With the new design of the building, we're not going to be able to have people coming in the front doors after the building is closed, which means it's going to eliminate visitation during the evening hours, which is the hours that most families prefer to come to visit their loved ones that are in jail. We can accommodate that through video visitation. It also, we're looking at trying to maximize our efficiencies with our staff. We've got a lot more area, a lot more square feet that we're going to have to cover, and we're trying to figure out just how we're going to do that. We feel that the video visitation plays a very important role in how we're going to efficiently manage our staff so that they can do the job that they need to do. So there's many reasons that we feel that the video visitation is very important.
Okay, I've got a lot of people on the list, and the first one is Ann Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All this resolution really is a means to correct a mistake. The LEC is a big project, and a relatively small mistake was made, and I don't think we have to point fingers as to who to blame. None of us are perfect, so a mistake was made. And so now here we are trying to correct it, and it simply would not be fair to not have video visitation in the existing jail and just have it in the new addition. And it is not taxpayer dollars being spent. It is the jail assessment fund, which is comprised of traffic fines, correct, Sheriff?
I believe maybe Jerry went, excuse me.
And so it's just a resolution to correct not even a really big mistake, but a mistake was made. And so here we are correcting it, or, you know, hopefully we'll be correcting it. So, anyway, I just think this should be passed.
Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would draw supervisors' attention to the first whereas clause in the resolution, which was it was the intention to have these capabilities in all areas of the jail. That's the first and foremost, in my mind, thing to remember is the sheriff's staff, the LEC committee, we thought these functions, the visitation, intercom, and overhead were going to be, or overhead paging, excuse me, were going to be throughout the jail, new portions and existing cell blocks. As the sheriff just pointed out, this is critical to his ability to manage the jail. I find it really ironic that I am saying, making this case right now, because I had the same reaction that Supervisor Geary and Supervisor Bina had tonight. That was my reaction when Executive Committee first dealt with this a week ago. I hope I was a little better behaved, maybe. but there is that initial reaction is to be really angry about this and to be furious and to find fault and figure out where to place blame. And I think what we have in front of us tonight is a good solution to the problem of having to make this change. And if you look at the numbers, the price tag for the correction is $124,000 roughly. Of that, $113,000 or $114,000 are fixed costs. That's the equipment and what it will take for electricians to install that equipment. The remainder is the oops factor. And the remainder is the markup, the costs for our consultants. And what's happened in this new proposal is they have eaten those costs. So what we are paying out of jail assessment fees are the fixed costs to install the equipment, to buy the equipment and to have it installed. And to me, that makes sense. And I would encourage everyone to vote in favor of this resolution to make sure that we get the law enforcement center that we have been working hard to get for the past many, 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 many months.
Ray Ebert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I support the amendment. I think the visitation is important. I've talked with the sheriff and Doris. My problem is taking it out of jail assessment. We have a contingency fund. And that's what contingencies are, something that's missed. So I'd like to make a motion that we take the $113,984 from contingency fund, and if that's approved, I'd like to remain the floor if it's seconded.
Mr. Ebert moves to amend the resolution to provide that the money comes from the contingency fund instead of the jail assessment fees. Is there a second to that amendment? Is there a second to that amendment? Seconded by Mr. Bina. Discussion, Mr. Ebert.
Yes, it seems to me that we went to the taxpayers and told them it's going to be $29.5 million. We've done an excellent job staying in this. We have contingency money to do this. As soon as we start taking this and switching it out and taking it from other funds, I think we open ourselves to, oh, you guys are playing fast and free with the truth. You came to us. We had a verbal contract with you. You're going to build it for this amount. And now, and this was included in what we had told them and what we thought ourselves, and I think it's a mistake to do it the other way and take it out of assessment. I think we're opening ourselves up to a little bait and switch claim.
Jill Billings on the amendment.
Okay, as when we're talking about funds, I was curious about this anyway. I'm not on the LEC committee or exec committee, so this is new to me too. How much money is in that special assessment fund? And what are we giving up if we take the money out of there?
Well, there are actually two separate questions. I'll turn how much is in the fund left over to Geary, because that's actually segregated from this amount. What's before you is actually spending money that was allocated for jail remodeling and improvements this year that's underspent from 2009, correct? Yeah. That's independent of the in excess of $1 million that's in the fund. This is actually a line item that came in under budget this year in what your needs were. It was already allocated for that purpose. We had counted on spending that, and through Jim's management of the facilities, he underspent that area that was allocated for this purpose, for fixes and changes in the existing jail. So it's already allocated for that purpose. It's not getting around what happens in the new law enforcement center addition. It's using money that was allocated for jail purposes and underspent in this last budget.
Vicki Burke.
Mr. Chairman, I too would ask.
Just a second, Vicki. Geary, can you give us that amount?
the amount which Mr. O'Malley explained is really independent of what this resolution is doing. The amount in the undesignated jail assessment fund is approximately $1,200,000.
Okay, now go ahead, Vicki. Sorry.
Mr. Chairman, I too would ask you to vote no on this amendment. I think this is something that was budgeted for. It does what it was required to do to make that kind of remodeling in the present facility. I wish to speak to this would be speaking to the main motion, but
why don't you hold off on that just a minute? You're next on the list anyway for when we get done with the amendment.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything further on the amendment? Okay. The amendment then is instead of taking the money from jail assessment to take it instead from the contingency. So if you are in favor of taking it from the contingency, vote yes. If you are in favor of taking it from jail assessment, vote no. All in favor of taking it from contingency, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes, please raise your hand. The ayes are Mr. Ebert, Mr. Bina, and Mr. Schrader. That amendment fails. Vicki Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As chair of the LAC Construction Committee, let me remind you that prior to the LAC Construction Committee, there was a committee that worked very diligently on the design of this particular addition and remodeling. And included in that was always the idea of video conferencing as a way of supplementing the face-to-face and giving inmates a greater opportunity for that kind of contact. At the LEC Construction Committee meeting, we were in favor of this, and I have to say that although we are concerned about money and taxpayer money and how that is spent, a major concern that we have in the committee is that when we have an addition to an existing structure and a remodeling within that structure, the one area that we want to make sure is compatible and works efficiently would be the intercom and the paging system and part of this, as well as the video visitation. It has a great deal of impact on the sheriff and jail staff's ability to move inmates within the facility. And in the construction of the addition, we have provided programming space, and this kind of communication is essential in making that kind of transition or in transferring inmates from one area to another. The second is that in the video visitation, one of the projects that we're currently working on with the Urban Institute and the National Institute of Corrections is the transitioning from jail to community. A part of that is trying to make connections with inmates prior to release, and video visitation certainly can be an extremely important part of that. I ask you to vote yes on this resolution simply because it doesn't make sense to me to spend $29.5 million and then for a small amount of money not have a very vital system, which is the communication, the paging, the video visitation, not working efficiently.
John Manninger. Bridget Flood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. These arguments about cost and how to allocate the cost and how to whether we should be going over the $29.5 million seem to me almost to be moot. The bottom line is the jail is an area of extreme possibility for liability for the county. We have to make it as safe as possible. We have to cut down as much as we can on liability. We also must make it possible for the jail staff to do their job, which you really need these systems to do that. So I urge everyone to vote for this resolution.
Sharon Hampson.
Thanks. I think enough's been said, but this is, in summary, an oversight. All parties are responsible. We are now getting it. The compromise is we're getting it at the cost. We would have gotten it if it had been included in the bid. And I appreciate the movement on the part of Markin and Johnson and Kish and Stanley to do that. And I don't believe we need to punish inmates and staff for a mistake, and I move to close debate.
We have a few more people who haven't had a chance to speak yet. I want to give them a chance before we cut it off. Ralph Geary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think the debate is about the security system, the video visitation, the intercom, the overhead paging. I think we should put it in. I'm beyond that. The point I was making is how should we fund it? In the original jail, we had a $200,000 plus argument with the architect. We did it. How did we fund it? We didn't pay the architect. We subtracted it from his fees, his or hers or the company's fees, and we made it quite clear to him. The only way that was going to get resolved was litigation. We never were litigated. They never were paid that money. We withheld it from the architect. We held somebody accountable to it, and I think that's the message that should go out to the vendors. I'm not proposing we not do this. I am proposing we do this. I'm saying the architect should step to the plate. If they don't, we withhold it from their fees. The court system will resolve it if they want to go that route.
Arlene Benrud.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When we built the jail before, 5 years ago, 4 years ago, I was on that committee, which Roger Plushes chaired. We went to many, many different jails. We spent many meetings. And when we brought it to the board, it was like $31 million. The board voted it down, and they went with $18 million. And I went on record saying that I'm not going to be responsible when this comes up again in 5 years. Guess what? It's not even 5 years. So I would think that we should not make another mistake like what we did before. Thank you.
I hate to point this out to you, Arlene, but that was 1997. But hey, time flies when you're having fun, right? All right, Leon Pat.
Still wrong.
Thank you. Whoever didn't include something in here to give the explanation for this resolution to start with, there as a group, if it's Steve or Vicky or whoever didn't send it out, if this would have been explained to us, we would have saved the last 40 minutes here discussing this, because this would have been understood. And when we come, if it would have been in our packet, an explanation of why and how and where it come from, instead of just sent out like this. So that's the part I'm disappointed about, is we could have saved a lot of time here.
It would have passed,
and I am in favor of it.
No, passing. It couldn't have been sent out because it was just resolved today.
Well, then you should have been on it a little bit quicker, or else the LEC should have known this a little sooner.
Leon, the issue was raised last Wednesday. They have been meeting feverishly, and I believe that Val Shute said there were even 11 phone calls today to resolve this. This is hot off the press.
Okay, well, then you could have had an explanation letter with it, because this here, you know, you've been explaining it, and everybody's been explaining it over and over. I get it, and I got it a long time ago, but we're carrying on a little bit too long with it. Thank you.
That's all the names that I had on the list. So if you are in favor of the resolution as it was presented, vote aye. If you are opposed, vote no. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The noes are 1 no. Mr. Geary, that passes. Mr. Zabronik is going to abstain, so it passes. All right, I think that's it for that one.
Yep. Item 1-22 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding modification of reporting requirements for certain human services purchase of service contracted vendors. I am moving to table this, and if it receives a second, would like to keep the floor to explain.
Well, no, you're not moving to table it yet.
Why? Oh, I'm going to put it on the floor, and then
you're going to put it on the floor, and then people have some comments they want.
I move its approval.
All right. So seconded by Jill Billings. Vicki Burke.
I object to the I'll have to wait until the motion is made to object to the moving to table. That's right.
And it's my understanding upon further review, Ms. Johnson is not going to move to table. She's going to move to postpone indefinitely.
I move to
That is what she will do when we get to that point.
And that is debatable.
And that is debatable. Okay. Sorry to steal your thunder.
Point
but
of parliamentary inquiry. The reason why there's objection to move to table to kill things is because the motion to table is not debatable. And what you do, in effect, is to cut off debate with only a majority vote. The reason why to postpone indefinitely is it only requires a majority vote as well, but it does not cut off debate. And one of the very main principles that Henry Robert had was that you do not cut off debate with only a majority vote. So that's why the motion to table to kill is not proper.
Okay. Correct, and that's why she's going to move to postpone indefinitely. Mr. O'Malley's not here, so sorry, Gary, I'm going to dump this on you as to why this is going to be pulled, or the motion is going to be made to postpone indefinitely, so people understand where that is coming from.
Just a point of inquiry.
Mr. Menninger.
Is the recommendation of this committee, Human Services Committee?
No. Executive.
The recommendation from the committee.
No, that's a good point.
You gotta play by the rules.
Okay. So then you'll give Vicky a chance to yell at us again, but we'll follow the procedure. But let me first stop this for a moment so people understand why this may go away. Gary.
Hopefully I can do this briefly.
Nobody else has tonight.
Thank you. The as the resolution states, there has been a policy per a resolution in 2003 that established reporting requirements for vendors, human services, purchase of service vendors that we do business with between 25 and 75,000. That reporting requirement is that they provide us with an income and expense summary at year end, so that we have a means of verifying their transactions, so to speak. The problem had been that the types of income and expense summaries that we had been receiving from the vendors were all varied. They were inconsistent from vendor to vendor, and we were trying to impose a means by which we would get more objective information, either by tax records or by a third party. What was done since the last meeting, since there were objections by county board members of requesting tax statements, we went back, the Human Services Department and the Finance Department went back and discussed it with the auditors, because the auditors and the state prefer that we get this information from the vendors. We came up with a method. We came up with actually a generic income and expense summary that it's very similar to what they have to fill out when they want to do business with us. We ask them to submit a budget to us at the beginning of the contract, and essentially the generic form that we are going to have them fill out at the end of the year is essentially verifying what their budget intended to spend. So frankly, this resolution that's before you was over and above the existing policy that we already have in place, we're just taking the existing policy and creating a generic form for the vendors to complete.
Discussion or questions for Gary? Mr. Ebert.
I would just like to thank the staff for coming with a much better solution. To start asking people for their income tax form is far and away beyond anything this body should be doing. And I want to thank you and your staff and the folks last time, who the supervisor that voted to table this. It was not time sensitive, and we came very close to making a real large mistake, and I thank the staff.
Any further discussion or questions? Tara Johnson.
I think at this point I'm obligated to move to table this in the hopes that no one will vote with me and we can replace that with a different motion.
Is there a second on the motion to table? Okay. Okay. All in favor of tabling, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Okay, the ayes, please raise your hand. Mr. Bina. All right, that fails. Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to postpone indefinitely Resolution 1-22.
Seconded by Vicky Burke. Table failed, so now we're moving to postpone indefinitely, which is more appropriate parliamentary procedure. Vicky Burke is correct in that regard. This is debatable, however. Jerry Sobranek.
Does this mean we can bring it off the table at any time?
We won't, but we could. Right. It would have the same outcome as the table. Any further discussion? All in favor of tabling indefinitely, say aye. Aye, just seeing if you're paying attention. All in favor of postponing indefinitely, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 1-23 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding adoption of contract for Hillview Local 150 union employees. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the tentative agreement of the parties for changes to this contract for the year 2010, which is attached hereto, including across-the-board wage increases of 2.0% January 1, 2010, and 1.0% July 1, 2010, be ratified as the changes to the working agreement between La Crosse County and the Hillview Employees Union SEIU Local 150, effective as specified in the agreement when ratified by the union. The fiscal note is the estimated increase in cost of wage, fringe benefits, and roll-ups for 2010 is $208,921, a package increase over 2009 of approximately 3.40%, of which 0.67% is insurance. There are approximately 138 employees in this bargaining unit. I move its approval.
Moved by Tara Johnson, second by Roger Plesha. Any discussion or questions? Ralph Geary.
With the fiscal woes the federal government is having, is our reimbursement rate still... Did they take a hit or anything where it's going to adversely affect Hillview's bottom line?
Actually, I think what you're referring to is the state reimbursement rates. They're certainly down. They're not as positive as they could be, but Hillview continues to not require county tax levy, and this is the last of the bargaining units that needs to settle and be ratified for 2010.
So we won't require levy over the term of this contract, is what you're saying?
No, not for Hillview.
Ray Ebert.
Yes, sir. On the question about jury duty, so as I understand this, they would get their regular county pay plus they would keep the jury duty money?
Mary Marco, our assistant personnel director, is here, who's on the bargaining team. She knows more of the details, so I will ask her to come here. Bob Taunt is at a personnel director's conference actually learning more what's happening across the state, so he wasn't able to attend. Did you hear the question, Mary?
I think so. You're questioning the jury duty piece?
Yeah, correct. When they're on jury duty, it appears that they will get their full salary, and it appears they may also get to keep the jury money?
Yes.
And why? I mean, then they're actually being made more than whole, and that makes no sense to me.
This is a discussion that we had, probably about mid-year, as far as the piece of turning that back over to the county. Because right now, prior to this, they were still being paid whole, but that check had to be turned back into the county. We had this discussion, I believe. I don't really know what the date was, but we've discussed about just the fact that there was the component and the bookkeeping piece of this, of having to receipt this back in. I can't just... Right, and then we'd have to be deducting hours for them. There was always the issue of the returning to work. Obviously, we require them to return to work if they were called to jury duty, and then the case was settled even after they'd reported. Mileage, though, is still excluded. I mean, mileage is something they get to keep because that's a separate check, as I understand it from the court system. So,
and how much is jury duty pay?
I believe $25. Yeah,
$25 a day.
So if someone is on a jury for a week or something, they would get their full pay plus $125.
If per day, yeah.
And that's true on all of our contracts? Or is this the first one that's going that way?
Well, we had discussed this to be more consistent across the board. Again, I believe this was something that was discussed this summer. I believe Bob took it as a discussion management team. Language. Yes,
this
exactly.
Consistent language throughout all the contracts.
That's
this is the last contract to settle for.
That's the intent that we were trying to move with this, yes.
I guess in tight budgets, it doesn't make sense to make people more than whole, but I guess if it's not, I just, these are things I wish were pointed out to us earlier in contracts, and certainly I know that we can all read, but that's something that I certainly would not have voted in the initial contract, and it doesn't make sense in tight budget times to make people more than whole. Thank you.
Any further discussion or questions? All in favor of the resolution, which is to approve the contract, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Audrey Cotter abstains. That passes.
Item 1-24 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding the 2010 Memorandums of Understanding for Jail Sergeants, Law Enforcement Sergeants, and Telecommunicator Supervisors. Whereas the Executive Committee has met to consider amendments to the salary and benefits of non-union jail sergeants, non-union law enforcement sergeants, and non-union telecommunicator supervisors, and has recommended certain amendments to the Memorandum of Understanding covering these employees. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the proposed changes to these memorandums for the year 2010, including across-the-board wage increases of 2% January 1 and 1% July 1, be ratified as the modifications to the working agreements between La Crosse County and these groups effective as specified in the memorandums. Fiscal note is for law enforcement sergeants, the estimated increase in cost of wage, fringe benefits, and roll-ups for 2010 is $27,536, a package increase over 2009 of approximately 3.45%, of which 0.16% is insurance, and there are 8 employees in this bargaining unit. For jail sergeants, the estimated increase in wage, fringe benefits, and roll-ups is $18,821, and that approximate increase is 3.12% over 2009, of which 0.21% is insurance, and there are 6 employees in that unit. And for telecom supervisors, the estimated increase and roll-up is $13,716, and that package increase over 2009 is approximately 3.15%, of which 0.19% is insurance, and there are 5 employees in this bargaining unit. I move its approval.
Moved by Tara Johnson. Is there a second? Seconded by Bill Brockmiller. Discussion or questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. And Audrey Cotter abstains. That passes. Is that it for you, Ms. Johnson?
Yes.
Thank you. Public Works and Infrastructure, Mr. Spiker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have item 1-25, approval amendment to number 6 to the solid waste disposal agreement between La Crosse County and Northern State Power Company. It was approved by, despite what the stamp says in the top of your resolution, it's just reversed. The Public Works Committee approved it on a 6-0-1 vote, and the Executive Committee approved it on a 9-0 vote. Whereas La Crosse County and Northern States Power Company, NSP, entered into a solid waste disposal agreement on March 18, 1986 for the provision of the solid waste processing disposal services of La Crosse County, which has been amended time to time. Whereas NSP has requested La Crosse County amend the agreement to remove one of the Minnesota plants from the calculation of the fuel credit because the plant was converted from coal plant to gas plant January 2009, where NSP has also requested the county to amend the agreement to remove all references to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission because the reporting director has been changed in the Energy Information Administration. Whereas the original agreement calculated fuel credit on NSP's base load coal facilities to make comparable energy adjustments for refuse-derived fuel taken from the waste stream delivered to the RDF plant on French Island. Whereas a failure to remove the plant, will result in fuel credit adjustment unfairly disproportionate to any change in fuel adjustments in prior years. Whereas La Crosse County and Northern State NSP I have also agreed to change the guaranteed annual tonnage from 73,000 tons to 70,000 tons for the year 2010 in exchange for granting SNSP one additional maintenance shutdown day for 2010 due to the impact of the economy on waste storage tonnage. Now, therefore, be resolved that La Crosse County Board hereby authorize amendment to number 6 to remove Riverside as one of the Minnesota plants utilized to calculate the fuel credit, and also to change the reporting directive to remove the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and replace it with the Energy Information Administration. Be it further resolved that County Board Chair and County Clerk are hereby authorized to execute amendment after approval of Corporation Council. The fiscal note change will result in approximately a reduction of $3,500 per month in a fuel credit provided to La Crosse County for 2010 and overpayment in 2009. 2010 budget has already been adjusted in anticipation of this reduction. I move for approval, Mr. Chairman.
Moved by Mr. Spiker, second by Leon Paff. Any discussion or questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Mr. Schrader? That's the name on the contract.
Technically, a division of Xcel is still NSP, and so that's still the contract that we have. Xcel is the overall corporation, you're correct, but NSP of Wisconsin still is the actual contract, as I understand it, that we have.
Let's try that vote again. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 1-26, again, the report of the committees is wrong. Public Works Committee approved it on a 4-2 vote, and the Executive Committee approved it on a 9-0 vote. Author, you want me to read this whole resolution?
No, please.
Thank you. There's a county board rule. What would you like me to read? For? Now, therefore, be resolved?
That sounds good.
Now, therefore, resolved that option 4 is approved by the La Crosse County Board to temporarily shore the damaged concrete floor system using wood beams and columns and involving no use of the damaged area after completion of the work under the option. Be it further resolved that County Administrator and Facility Director are hereby authorized to proceed with option 4 in phase 2 consistent with the applicable state law and county purchasing policies regarding public construction projects at a cost not to exceed the remaining balance of $45,000 from the original appropriation for the project. Fiscal note, the cost of each 4 option as follows, which is on your resolution. I move for approval, Mr. Chairman.
Moved by Mr. Spiker. Is there a second? Second by Bill Brockmiller. I want to read one paragraph for those who end up watching this on television because they have nothing better to do. To make that or help them understand what we're voting on. The one whereas, which is option 4, which is temporary shoring wood beams and columns and no use, would also be a temporary solution involving the use of wood shoring to support the existing floor slab, and neither the first floor nor basement area where the damage is located would be available for use under this option. Okay, discussion. Bill Brockmiller.
Well, I had a question or a point of information or whatnot. I was wondering, since option 4, which is on the floor now, actually money, the 45 had already been approved for that. Is this out, if we approve option 4, is that a simple majority or two-thirds, since it's already been approved, the 45,000?
Mr. Shepherd says majority.
Okay.
Other questions or discussion? Ralph Geary.
At some point in time, the county board should grapple with, are we going to maintain this building properly, or are you going to build a new building? It makes it no sense to me to stick $40,000 into temporary shoring and in 3 or 4 years figure out, well, maybe we're going to keep the building, so we'll tear all that out and do something else. I think at some point in time we're going to have a planning meeting to get this issue, to let people know what's on the what the options are, or what's on the horizon, or why they're band-aiding this building, because if we don't maintain it properly at some point in time, it'll just by default force us into doing something maybe we didn't have to do. So I've always been in favor of correcting this problem with a full replacement and full use, and the space is usable. Sticking money into something, would you do this in your home? Well, the living room's kind of, can't use the living room, but I'll shore it up temporarily. In 4 or 5 years, I'll figure out if I want to make a permanent replacement.
Jim Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I agree completely with Supervisor Geary. I mean, I voted against this in committee. I'm going to be consistent. I'm going to vote against this resolution tonight. I just don't see option four as being very visionary, to be quite honest. We need a vision for this building, and we need to talk about it. And I'm not in a position tonight to make that decision. So I supported the full replacement, full use option because I think that's going to be the best fiscal decision in the long run. And I want to think number one, long run. Number two, I want a vision for the future. And I just don't see this with option four. Thank you,
Mr. O'Malley.
Let me remind everybody that we've already spent a huge amount of money and energy into doing the law enforcement center addition. To make this decision to go ahead and fully replace that is like the tail wagging the dog. You've already allocated this money, and through Jim Spropoulos's expertise and due diligence, we've stayed within the money you've already allocated and figured out the lowest cost way to do this. To make that decision before you're ready to make a multi-million dollar decision on either remodeling or replacing this building, again, is letting the tail wag the dog. You've already allocated this money, and again, through Jim's expertise and attention to detail, we're able to stay within what you've already authorized. This means then you don't have to make that decision, remodel or replace this building right now, because you don't have enough money to be able to make that decision yet. You don't need to make that tonight. We've stayed within the money you've already allocated, and we can get by. This is not your living room, by the way. It's a garage that you haven't been using a lot. So using the home analogy, if you had a second garage that you already weren't using and you already had a place to park your car, you'd make this decision too, especially if you couldn't afford it for the next 4 or 5 years because you're making a larger mortgage payment on something you'd already committed to. That's the law enforcement center. Remember, we have 4 years to get through paying for two law enforcement centers. That's why we're not ready to give you a recommendation on what the best thing to do with this building is. We've gotten rid of the asbestos. We've taken care of it. To not stay within this is making the tail wag the dog. You're not ready for that decision, and neither are the taxpayers.
Leon Paff.
That's just what I was going to say, Steve, and I voted for it in committee.
You're I good.
Know, I know what.
And you would have said it in less words, I'm sure.
Jill Billings.
A few years ago, we looked at the campus plan at our planning meeting. And I think there is a vision there. There was a vision there. But a couple things happened. The Law Enforcement Center addition had priority. And the recession hit. And suddenly, I think smartly, we're shelving big projects because we're trying to be responsible with the programs that we have and the services that we have to deliver now. So there is a vision there, but we're putting it off. And I refer to this as our back porch, possibly the outhouse. And it's okay. It's fine.
Ray Ebert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I want to thank Mr. Spropoulos, showed me the area earlier this evening. And it's shockingly, I'm going to actually switch my vote on my thing. It's $45,000. It's a lot more than I'd like to. But again, I think we're buying some time to make a bigger decision. I would, however, certainly like to see this campus plan come back for a lot of us who either weren't here or don't remember it to get just a rough idea and take a look at it, and it would help. In fact, actually, I want to make a motion to hold this over for 30 days, and that we can take a look and maybe have a bankruptcy meeting. So that's my like to amend to hold for 30 days.
There's a motion to hold over for 30 days. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Geary. Discussion on holding it over for 30 days. All in favor of holding over for 30 days, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The ayes, please raise your hand. They are Mr. Ebert, Mr. Geary, and Mr. Schrader. Okay, back on the resolution, Brad Conkle.
Now, I wasn't here for the full campus plan idea. I have no idea what was discussed for the future of this building in particular. I'm in support of option four, kind of hesitantly though. I do have reservations about it. I don't know what's going on with this building, but it's our best option for right now. And I would like to see an idea of what's going to happen with this building in particular in the near future, if we're spending this money in option four, but our long-term plan is to keep this building, perhaps we would want a full replacement. So, you know, I think that this is a decision that, you know, it would be nice to have some foresight as to what's going on. But I think that option four is the way to go for right now.
In election years, we have been having county board retreat where we try to talk about kind of long-term planning and those kinds of things. So why don't we add this kind of an overview of here's where we're at and what the future looks like to our retreat in April? Okay. Other discussion or questions? All in favor of the resolution, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The noes are Mr. Geary, Mr. Schrader, Ms. Flood, and Mr. Burns. That passes. Is that it for you, Mr. Spiker?
Yes, sir.
Any future agenda topics? Mr. Mettinger.
Well, this isn't a future agenda. It's actually passed. But one of the things that we do when we adopt those zoning and planning terminations en masse, we sometimes miss some of the history. And there was one in there with Steve Parr in an ambulance service working out of his house back in 1984. For those people who understand all the blood on the floor about ambulances in this community, that was also an interesting discussion. I remember it at the time, but just before that, when the sheriff's department came on the scene of an accident, they just throw you in the back and drag you out of your car and throw you in the back and drive to the hospital real fast. So we've made a lot of progress. That was a little historical tidbit. And I did want to compliment Mr. O'Malley for his comments in today's paper about mental health parity. Very disappointed in the city of La Crosse, very happy with the county of La Crosse. So thanks, Steve, for doing that.
Other future agenda items, Mr. Spiker.
I don't know about future agenda items, but how about the contract with Tri-State Ambulance Net? Where are we at?
We have an EMS commission meeting coming up soon, and in between, Mr. Shepherd and some others are talking about it. Bill, why don't you very briefly tell them where we're at?
Thank you. Today we had a meeting of the subcommittee. We had a very good meeting. We discussed the framework for a new contract, and what we've proposed to the chair, and I think I talked to Mayor Giese of Onalaska this afternoon, who is the chair, that we will bring forward to next week's meeting several items of, I guess, discussion, maybe decisions. One of the critical areas is the response areas and response times. The thing that the committee discussed today was having three zones in the county with three different response times to more accurately measure what the responses are. So there'll be a discussion on that and at the meeting next week with the whole commission. If we have time, the other area will be kind of quality control, monitoring of that. How do we, you know, what we hope to get from Tri-State is a presentation on what they currently do to monitor quality, and so we'll have some discussion on that also.
There was some concern a few months ago that the city would not participate in the EMS commission, but they have been, and I very much appreciate that. I think that it's good for everybody that we've got everybody at the table. Any further whatevers people have, items for future agenda, announcements, comments, complaints? Mr. Geary?
We doing anything with Park Plaza?
Just in your report.
Mr. Mettinger?
Yeah, I do have one thing. I was reading, I think it was in the NACO magazine or whatever it was, about what counties are doing with poor people who die and the burial cost and stuff. And I just, maybe you can, somebody could give us a little piece of paper next month and tell us how many people die in La Crosse County that are indigent, what it cost us, what we do with those bodies, where they go. I'm a little kind of curious because I saw an article on that. It's an increasing cost to local government because of the increasing homelessness and things like that.
Okay, we'll get that to you. Terry Johnson.
Just a reminder, because we've been here for a while, that from what I'm hearing, the road conditions and sidewalk conditions are not good. So when you take those first few steps outside, be careful, and then please be careful driving home.
Jerry Sobranek.
Can we get some information on
The retreat in April, when and where, what time?
Yes, I want to do that at the February planning meeting, so we'll try to bring your calendars with you, and we'll try to set that date. Unless you plan on being defeated, then you don't need to bring your calendar with you. Tara Johnson.
I'm really sorry. Just one more thing. Linda, do you want to remind people what would be helpful to you that we should do with our computers when we're done with these meetings?
Actually, Tara, since that is likely to change in the next couple of months, there's maybe no point in going through it at this time. I'll just take care of it. Thanks anyway, though.
She's feeling defeated, too. Anybody want to make a motion to adjourn? Motion by Bill Brockmiller, second by Jerry Sobranek. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.